All right, so tonight we are continuing with the Heart Sutra, and this is Module 18, Class 5. And the reading was page 106 to 118 in the Heart Attack Sutra by Carl Brinkholz. So, what do I see? Here it is. So to begin, I thought I'd like to make an aspiration just to begin this teaching. I'd like to make an aspiration that we can rouse our intellect to hear and contemplate these profound teachings on emptiness. And as these teachings penetrate more and more deeply, that we will have a greater understanding of egolessness. With that understanding, may our heart of compassion open further and further, so we may benefit all sentient beings. So I wanted to start with actually this version of the Heart Sutra we got at the Kelong Rinpoche retreat. And actually, a friend of mine who's blind reminded me about the introduction, which, of course, I would never remember. But he memorized it and recited it to me over the phone.
Oh.
And he said, "I do it while I wash dishes." And I thought, all right, if he can do this, he's like the bard from Homer. He's like Homer, I think. So this particular version of the Heart Sutra has an introduction, which is really interesting, because ours starts with, "Thus have I heard," right? So I want to read the introduction to you, and I did type it. I'll send it to Sandra to post, so you'll be able to use it. And if you're reciting the Heart Sutra, you might want to recite this before the actual text that you're using, because it is the introduction. As you know, there are many different versions of the Heart Sutra, and some of them have an introduction. So here it is. Beyond words, beyond thought, beyond description, prajna paramita. Prajna paramita, inexpressible by speech or thought. Unborn, unceasing, the very essence of space. Unborn, unceasing, with a nature like the sky. Yet it can be experienced as the wisdom of our own Rigpa, which can only be experienced by discriminating awareness wisdom. Homage to the mother of the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. Mother of the victorious ones of the three times, I praise and prostrate. So I particularly like that first line, beyond words, beyond thought, beyond description. So here we are, and we're already in class 5 of the Heart Sutra, and we're still on the first page. So we, I guess, have to use words and really work with opening to different ways of actually learning and getting information. So I actually struggle with this a lot. And I had a dream a couple weeks ago, and I don't often remember my dreams, even though I try, but it was just totally clear. And people were in front of me, but there was like a table. It was obviously a class or something. And I made some statement or taught something. It was just really very clear. It was like a proclamation. Then I looked to my right, and Judy Leaf was sitting there. Judy Leaf is the one who did the editing of The Profound Treasury of the Ocean of Dharma, 3-volume books of Trungpa Rinpoche. And she looked totally shocked. I said, "Well, you taught this to me." And so she laughed. It was like, okay, so that felt good. There was something that was actually being conveyed. So, but I have to say, you know, I find this challenging myself, and I think, especially since now I have the chapter on Madhyamaka, which has never been my favorite topic. But in any case, we are now on the middle way without a middle, and this middle way, it's so funny when you say the middle way without a middle. So there it is. It's there, but it's really not there. And I thought I would just start by going back just a little bit into some of the material that Michael Fagan covered. So starting on page 104 and looking at that one more time before we actually start with the material for tonight. I'll just read this first paragraph because I think this material on form is emptiness, emptiness also is form, etc., is really, really central, and I would like to have more discussion on it than we've had, I think. Form is emptiness, emptiness also is form, also counteracts one-sided clinging to either appearing forms or emptiness alone, or entertaining some form of eternalism or nihilism, respectively. Therefore, it shows the middle way between these extremes. In terms of the view, the famous middle way means not to fall into clinging to just appearance or clinging to just emptiness, but to see that appearance and emptiness are inseparable. In that way, we are not getting stuck on either one. We do not make things more solid than they are, and we do not deny that there are fleeting and ever-changing illusory appearances. This is called the union of the two realities. Again, this is not just some logical or philosophical exercise, but it refers to the experience of how our mind reacts to things that we take to be more real than they actually are. So here we're working with the first two of these famous four. Form is emptiness, emptiness also is form. So the first one, he talks about a movie and how when we see a movie, we see the appearances on the screen and we react to it. We feel an emotional reaction. We feel we get hooked. We can easily get totally involved in that. But that is really just an illusion. We can step back and we know that. But once we're in it, it feels, I think, so real. So that is really, really that sense, they use the word eternalism. So something very solid. And here we're talking about appearances arising and being very solid. And then the other side of it is this nihilism, which is emptiness is also form, and that quality of, you could say in the bottom of this page, 104, it says, nothing is happening at all. It says, on the other hand, if we just say, nothing is happening at all, we are in denial that in terms of relative reality, certain things actually do happen and we are subject to them. Obviously, we cannot just pretend that nothing is happening when we are kicked out of our apartment, do not pay our bills and taxes, keep driving when the lights are red, and so on. Of course, we can forget about all that once we have realized emptiness, as Avalokiteshvara has, but for as long as we experience relative causes and their effects, we cannot ignore that type of reality and need to work with it in appropriate ways. So this is really the other side of it, which is emptiness also is form. And that statement cuts through the nihilism that nothing matters. And it really relates to the quality of emptiness. So the first thing we're talking about is things appearing, which we, in our world, appearance seems to be everything. We see things, and this is our world. This is how we believe it's there, it's solid, it's real. And we don't really examine that. So here we're being asked to examine it. But then the other side of it is that emptiness is form. So we don't want to get stuck in one or the other. And the emptiness is what actually cuts through that solidity. Any comments so far, or how people are like relating to this?
Only that Avalokiteshvara, if he were driving down the street, he would have to pay attention to the stoplights.
He would.
Yes.
Even if he were...
He's not transcended that particular issue. If you're in that functional dimension, there's nothing wrong with accepting functional realities as they are. And that's, they may be empty in their nature, but they still have to be attended to or acknowledged. So it, I think that that was that, that sentence was not really appropriate.
The Avalokiteshvara.
Yeah, if Avalokiteshvara actually walks into this room, he's got to pay attention that he doesn't hit the wall when he walk. He's acknowledging the realities of time and space.
Avalokiteshvara walks into a bar.
Yeah,
I think there was a section, I read the book earlier, I haven't been rereading it, but there was a section that really struck me relating to the basic form is emptiness, emptiness is form, and one his point that I that stuck with me was that you can't have emptiness of nothing whatsoever, that there has to be something, you know, emptiness is not a characteristic of nothingness, emptiness is a characteristic of things with form, and that there's actually... I was actually in some ways a little disappointed when I came to that section because it was a more straightforward explanation of form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And I was it was so straightforward that I felt like, you know, that was a little bit too clear an explanation, if you will.
Well, emptiness and form are simply... they arise together, but actually when you get into it, emptiness is empty of itself.
Yeah.
I mean, saying emptiness is a thing is also a big trap, you know, where you actually believe emptiness is really something.
But I think the idea that, you know, the avoiding the idea that emptiness is just, you know, avoiding the nihilistic trap, but also just that, you know, emptiness is only a... it is a quality or an aspect that is associated with things, as opposed to just some... and emptiness is not a characteristic of the void.
It's not space.
Yeah.
It's not just nothing or, nothing there.
But people originally translated and still use this term void, you know, when they often talk about emptiness.
Yeah.
So it's very confusing.
That's not really very clear or correct.
I mean, I've heard Buddhist teachers, I've heard lamas use that term void in English when they actually say something, because they're referring to translations in English, particularly in the earlier days when that was the standard. And even, as I mentioned last week, emptiness itself is really... It's a compromise.
It might be better just not even to turn it into a noun. That's the trap, you know, to say empty of self nature or empty of essence.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
just to use that phrase, you know, to make it a quality rather than a thing.
Yeah. Again, none of this is solid, but we have to, you know, to try to understand it, we have to use ways of communicating. But. And then the other, then I also on page 105, I thought this was very interesting too. Form is emptiness. Emptiness also is form, can also be understood as indicating meditative equipoise without appearance, and the periods between formal meditation sessions that entail appearance respectively. So that to me is, if that's sort of the mixing here of the meditation practice, you can experience those gaps, and that's emptiness. Like, instead of making this sound like, you know, nobody can understand it or it doesn't happen or it's hard to touch into, with meditation practice, we're touching into emptiness all the time. Every time we come back, every time we remember that what we're doing, and we let go and come back to the breath and let go, that's touching into the quality of emptiness. And then he's talking about then bringing those periods, the emptiness, into the appearance. So when you get up off the cushion and you're washing your dishes or you're going about your life, the world, sort of, you could say, appears to you, and you're bringing the meditative quality into the world. So this was an example to me that I hadn't really thought about before, how emptiness actually can be united with the aspect of form or appearance. So every time you're in a situation where you just remember spaciousness or that gap, you're bringing that opening to your experience right there.
So what's equipoise?
Equipoise is meditative, just when you're settled in meditation. That's meditative equipoise, when you're settled in meditation.
When you have moments of clarity.
Clarity.
As rare as they may be.
I had one of those once.
Yeah. Michael, did you want anything to say something?
Oh. No, I wanted to ask you, would you please explain the third one?
The third one. Okay, we're coming there. Okay, so let's see what I wrote in the margin.
Just read it and explain it.
The third one. Emptiness is no other than form, presents the union of appearance and emptiness, or the inseparability of emptiness and dependent origination. Thus rejecting the extreme of being both existent and non-existent, or eliminating the two extremes of nihilism and existential absolutism at once.
Can you tell us what that means?
So things are due to causes and conditions. That's dependent origination. So this then is, this is kind of... Well, I think to quote you, because you helped me with this, cutting through having it both ways. Emptiness is no other than form. So it's kind of putting them together, the emptiness and form together. And the example that Pumla Rinpoche gave of this was a student said, how can you sit on that empty chair? And why wouldn't you fall through it? And he said, you're mixing the relative and absolute truths. So this is a very important point, and there's a lot more in here about the relative and absolute in this section, and I think we'll get into that more. So you can't... This is where a lot of confusion in Buddhist teachings comes through, where people hear one side and then another side, and they put them together.
But how would you
answer
that? They
glom them together.
You could answer it. I should say, you're empty too. How can you possibly have a problem? You're empty, the chair is empty, nobody's having a problem with gravity, right?
Well, I don't know if I'd say it that way.
What is smack talk there?
Well, you could take them both as empty, if you're looking at it from the absolute point of view, they are both empty, the person and the chair, but from a relative point of view, you could say, yes, there is a chair from a relative point of view and a person sitting on it.
Yeah.
So you just can't mix them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways at the same time.
Right. Right.
I think there was sort of a phrase in what you read that I think is sort of key, which is the emptiness and dependent origination.
Yeah.
I think of that as the most useful way of thinking. You know, that a lot of the discussion of emptiness is really... there are just not the things existing in the absolute, in absolute, independent, and solid. That is, you know, everything is causes and conditions. That is what the emptiness definition is really interlinked with. That's
one of the definitions. How many people are reading the? Were people reading the progressive stages of meditation on emptiness?
We did that, didn't we?
We just did
the very beginning.
Yeah.
For
okay.
This
because yeah, if you study that, it talks about the various ways of understanding.
Yeah, and I've
right.
worked through some
She's worked with that a lot. Yeah, worked a lot. So, more comments? Yeah, go ahead.
Can you say that once you kind of understand this more and you kind of perceive emptiness, you know, in the way you're describing it, do people who get it, like you might walk into a room and really look at the world in a different way?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
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 I mean, that's kind of one of the things that we're working towards.
Yes.
Right?
I think the way I see it is like noticing the best way is to be around a teacher that's a realized person, or even partly realized. Even hearing Carl, because I went to a program in Connecticut where he talked on the relative and absolute truth. Because the students in Nalanda Bodhi in Connecticut say, they tell him what they want to learn, and then he would come and give talks on that. So Michael and I went to this weekend program, and it was on the relative and absolute truth. And he was laughing the whole time and making, you know, just the whole thing was very lighthearted. When he talks about a lighter touch, you know, that sense, I think when the real people who have some level of realization, I think they can, they don't have to always sort of take everything so seriously in a way. They see, they penetrate through, yeah.
I don't think you have to wait for some realized teacher to arrive. You can do this right now.
I think we do
it. We do
it right now. I think
yes.
It's like we're ghosting ourselves in a way. We just sort of notice it almost in passing, that the sort of the desolidification of all of these situations. I think we're, as Michael was saying,
yeah,
it's occurring constantly.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe the thing to not to expect that something will happen and it will change your perspective permanently. That it's not going to be before emptiness and after emptiness. That
it's not like turning a corner and all of a sudden.
But it might be flashes.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You'll
bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just still.
Yeah.
For myself, I found that I have to be careful that I'm not using this to run away from my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
To do what?
Run away from my feelings.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Having a tough day.
Uh-huh.
And the Heart Sutra does, for me, I make it part of my daily practice now. It actually really settles me before my meditation. I actually do it before my meditation because I found that it settles me.
Yes. Well, generally that's when you do it. Mm-hmm. That's a good time to do it because it helps open
it
to your practice.
It does. Mm-hmm. And I found that there are times when something's tough going on, and I'm drawn to go settle myself with it.
Uh-huh.
But what I've realized that I've done is I'm trying to run away from what's going on in here instead of really kind of being with what's there and not attaching to it. I'm trying to run away from it, essentially. So it's, I realize I'm solidifying this as an escape, essentially.
That's
just a whole amazing thing.
So
you can't solidify any of this, in fact.
Well, I'm trying to. Is my point. That's what I'm noticing I'm doing.
But you're seeing it.
Yes.
And then what do you do?
I go, okay, let's just sit with this then. Whatever it is I'm trying to run away from,
I
just got to sit with this.
It's not really an antidote.
Right.
You're not trying to.
Exactly.
You're not trying to apply it
exactly.
Like aspirin or something. So,
and then the irony is, just by sitting with it, you're actually doing what this is talking about,
right? Because you're opening to what is.
Right.
You're opening to the truth of what's happening in your life.
Right.
And you're allowing that to come through.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's good. So the fourth is form is no other than emptiness, and that signifies the appearance and emptiness. That appearance and emptiness are not incompatible, but they really, it says, they necessarily supplement each other in perfect harmony, thus negating the extreme of being neither existent nor non-existent. In this way, all possibilities of how we mistakenly conceive of phenomena as existent, non-existent, both, or neither, are transcended, which constitutes the total freedom of all expressions, thoughts, and reference points. So the last one, yes.
Getting back to what you said earlier, would you go over that again 1 second?
Yeah.
You said you can't have them both at the same time. You said you can't have emptiness, unless I misheard, emptiness and form at the same
time. No, they're inseparable.
They're inseparable.
How can
you?
I couldn't have said that. If I said that,
that's what it sounded like.
Was that about the chair?
The chair. I think what you were referring
relative
to.
Relative and absolute.
You can't.
You're
mix
mixing
them.
The relative and
you
absolute.
Were, yeah, you were talking about mixing the relative and the absolute.
As the example.
This is the problem when you just don't actually accept and respect the realities of, you know, cause and effect and appearance, and you decide, well, emptiness is better somehow to be, you know, higher or something. There's no separation because emptiness.
There's no separation, but there's no allegiance.
No allegiance to anything, and that's the freedom. That's what we talk about. Liberation is fundamental nature of emptiness. Is fundamentally the way we can understand liberation. Since it's completely open, it's not attached. There's no, even though there are cause and effect elements going on, and we could be having a difficult time, or we could be having a very bright time. The fact is, it's completely, fundamentally, as we go further, we'll learn more about a natural state of liberation, which is the true nature of the experience itself. So it doesn't mean that we don't experience up and down and right and left and pain and pleasure, but we don't have to be trapped by those things. We actually can discover freedom in actually working directly with that.
So what does the fourth one mean?
What does it mean? Oh, my goodness. I don't know. What do you think it means?
Well, no, you're going to tell us what it means.
All right, well, let's see.
I made a promise that I would make you do that.
You did? Oh, you're torturing me. Form is no other than emptiness. So appearance and emptiness are not incompatible, and they supplement each other. So does that mean... So what does that really mean? Are they together, but separate? I mean, they're different, but they're together?
How can they be different?
How can they be different? Form and emptiness?
Yeah.
They're two sides of the same coin.
Right.
So...
Right.
But we still talk about them as different.
We're trying to make a distinction in order to understand the nature of the phenomena. And so that's why we make... I mean, the emptiness... You can't even talk about emptiness without form, because how would you even be able to discuss it on its own terms?
That's what Sandra was saying.
Exactly.
Yeah. They come together, yeah.
So what does the fourth one mean?
Okay, Michael, that's
okay. I may be totally off, but I'm... Like the dependent origination means something to me too. I'm not sure if I understand what it means, but it seems like form comes out of emptiness and disappears into I don't know, anything that is form, or it's fleeting, and it, but it just kind of all squishes from form to emptiness. I don't know. I think of it. Okay, I don't know if I can have them coexisting. I think of it, I mean, if anything exists, it arises out of emptiness. Is that what dependent origination is? Or I've got it all screwed up, right?
Well, it's been put that way if you read certain texts, there's no question.
Okay.
Visualization text, for instance, the deity, when you do deity practice, they often talk about it as the deity arising from emptiness, as it were. Spontaneously arising. But emptiness in that sense is, you know, we have to be careful about, because this emptiness is a huge, huge term. It refers to, it doesn't only refer to the nature, but it also refers to some kind of sense of space. And so space is, you know, part of what we're talking about here. Space. So when we talk about where do the thoughts disappear, where do they arise from, where do they go, and we don't find it, right, when we look. Has anyone experienced that particular finding? Okay, so, you know, that's kind of like an introduction to a sense of emptiness or openness and just spaciousness, right?
I think more of the quantum physics, with everything being divided into finer and finer particles, till they all they can say is there are no particles. There's just sort of a...
Yeah.
A little notation that we make, because that's how we have to think of it, but we don't.
Or we could say waves, right?
Waves.
The particles, waves. Wavicles.
But I would also say, not heard of wavicles.
Stick with physics as a metaphor. Don't try to map it exactly onto. You know, there is emptiness in physics. There's emptiness in Buddhism. Don't make them into the same thing. But just you know, think of it as an example, not as. Don't try too precisely to make attached to that metaphor. Is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I try to get hold of it, but I don't think.
Yeah, I wouldn't even try.
I'm just trying to understand it.
We don't. It's more of an intuition. It's an intuition rather than a deduction. So you know, you can't use logic to, I mean, this the whole point of the middle way of using logic to get to the point of where you can't, it comes to its own end. It can't really, that's why you abandon, you know, this is an extreme position.
So what does dependent origination mean?
So things arise depending on causes and conditions. They come together because of circumstances. Like they use the example of a seed, for instance. So a seed is there, but then it changes into something else, and then it changes into something else, and it changes. And we put it together in a string, but at any one point, it's not the same it was before. So it's like slicing it up and realizing that along the way, every stage is different, and we make a continuity, but when it's really examined thoroughly, there's a lot of space in there. That's how I think of it. I don't know if that's any kind of adequate example, but
there's millions of examples of causes and conditions. Your car comes together just on a brutal way. Your car is all causes and conditions. This piece was made in this factory and this factory and put together, and all of a sudden, with all these causes and conditions of all these disparate elements, it becomes a car. But really, it's made up of myriad items that require each other to be together in order to.
Yeah, that a car is a label for a set of causes and conditions that came together.
There are other causes and conditions.
One of the causes and conditions of that car coming together is that someone transported a particular piece, and one of the causes of that being transported is that someone paid that person to do it. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that happened is that some investor saw that this was profitable. So the causes and conditions are not a single thread.
And they never end.
They come infinitely many.
Okay, so let her ask. Go ahead.
I'm wondering how this relates to form and emptiness. I can't go from a car and all the stuff coming from China or Korea or wherever.
You could say that the car doesn't exist as we think it does. It exists as this infinite web of interconnections. And that web-like nature, which has no end, both in space and in time, is emptiness. That is the empty nature of the car. It doesn't exist as a separate entity because it can only be there because of all those things coming into it, all the people that were involved in making the parts.
The capitalist system.
Investing, you know, where the rubber came from, trees or wherever. The trees that grew. And since that goes on without end, both in time and in space, the very definition of emptiness. Mm-hmm. Because it's not that the car doesn't exist.
Well, it's there.
Yeah. And the whole web is there. But it's not, by the same token, it doesn't exist as a separate entity. So it does not exist. It doesn't exist. What is the type of existence it has? It's emptiness. It is, which to me is identical with that enormous web. Mm-hmm. That is that car. Yeah. It's not that these things went into making it the car. That car actually is all of that.
Right.
And therefore, everything is everything else. Okay. And to me, that's emptiness.
I think it doesn't exist independently.
Right. Not independently.
And then at the same time, it's a label.
Yeah.
And we put the label on it, and we decide the label's real.
Yes.
But the label is only a label. And so that is another aspect of emptiness. And then we have fantasies about what the label is, because each of us have an interpretation about what that label
is. I think you're actually jumping ahead. I think that actually stick with looking at the web. This
is the important thing about causes and conditions, as emptiness.
That's bringing it back to away from the web, though, I feel like.
Which part?
I like the web.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have a chance, could you write up what you just
said? Yes.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Because that would be, that was a really eloquent way of describing
I like thinking of, rather than a car, like either a person or a frog or something. I mean, just something living.
Yeah.
So that just, there's just no, I mean, we do this with the kids at Audubon, that there's just really no, we tend to think of something, this one discrete frog or something.
Yeah.
But when you go the beginning and the end, I mean, it just goes on forever.
Right. Yeah, actually, I've spent some time thinking about that with regards to this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what, where is the boundary of Peter?
Mm. Yeah, right.
Well, it, you know, it seems obvious. This is Peter. This over here is not Peter.
Yeah, but
well,
not really.
But actually, when I look at it in detail,
mm-hmm.
Where did this actually come from? Well, stuff that I ate a week ago, a year ago, whatever. Well, listen, maybe not a year ago. That's probably all gone by now. Okay, it got digested. It get sent through my circulatory system, and the things that I ate became all of this. And then that gets replaced over time.
Right.
Well, where did the stuff that I ate come from? Well, of course, it's all
a big web.
And I know,
all the stuff was grown by the people that were involved. Who knows where it came from? You know.
Well, there's that quotation attributed to John Muir: when you tug on one thing in nature, you'll find it's attached to the entire universe.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful.
And so is your car.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's warm and fuzzy or it's hard and not, it is attached to the entire universe.
But I remember having
it's easier for me to think about like something growing out of the earth.
Yeah,
and like the dirt becoming the flower or whatever. How that stuff is all interdependent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And things become each other.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're here because we
die and then we're in the earth and those things all comes
so
around.
That's part of the impermanence factor, which is another aspect of fundamental impermanence, because nothing's lasting. Everything is continuously changing. That is an aspect of emptiness also, or the empty aspect of something, because it's just never, ever the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about your body, like what you think your body is, it's something that's constantly in a state of change. And what you seem to appear right now is going to be very different tomorrow, and certainly the next day. And, you know, so, I mean, when we think about, this is our habit, though, is we slap these labels on, and then we actually think that they're staying in place and that those things are solid. But if we actually are, if we are willing to mix emptiness with those labels and with form that we experience and work with, then everything gets much more fluid and flexible, right?
But the form is still there.
The form is still there, but it's changing all the time. For a split second.
Yeah, I think the problem with what Michael's saying is you're combining the, you know, there's a sort of the human process of interpreting this with the, you know, with we're saying some things and you're saying, and then of course it's misinterpreted in these ways, but we don't have to go to the misinterpretation.
I meant variously interpreted, because as we were talking last week, an animal is going to look at a flower very differently than a human. And there's nothing wrong with either one. You know, it's just that we have this notion that the way we see things is really the way it is.
Right.
And that's all. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, honestly, we're just, you know, our particular perception is a part of a much greater kind of reality. And emptiness is a way to sort of open up to that kind of space and be more sensitive, I think. That's one of the aspects, or you could say corollaries to working with these teachings. This is not an intellectual exercise, even though sometimes it appears to be. I mean, when you go through an examination right. process, you use your intellect to do that, but you also can use your heart in terms of
Oh, but that's the next part you're going to talk about.
Michael, don't worry. I'll lead the class. Just let go, let go, let go. So that actually is a good lead-in, to quote Michael. The question, well, which is interesting in this section that we're working with is how does he present this material right in the middle of the book? It's question and answer. It's good old Shari Pundra's method. Wasn't that cute?
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we... I numbered the questions, actually, but I think it would be good to look at the things that have to do with compassion. On page 113, the question says, the experience of ultimate reality, even if it is fleeting, happens spontaneously or instantly. So does compassion arise equally naturally along with that experience? In other words, does the experience of great compassion or care for all beings spring from the realization of emptiness?
I don't have that.
Page 113.
Okay.
And Carl says, a realization of emptiness without compassion is impossible. However, it is not that once we realize emptiness, we suddenly jump from no compassion to limitless compassion for all sentient beings, as this realization definitely depends on having previously cultivated compassion. Just meditating on and realizing the ultimate emptiness is unfortunately not enough. The path to Buddhahood involves many other practices on the level of relative reality in order to cultivate and enhance compassion and put it into action. Compassion is often compared to the moistening quality of water in that it moistens our mind stream, thus making it supple, flexible, and fertile. So, what do you think about compassion in relation to emptiness and all of this?
Well, I got a question then. I think it connects with this, although it may not seem. What then is the difference between spontaneity and dependent origination?
I have no idea. Why did you bring that up?
Because compassion, if there's the talk on compassion being the automatic result of emptiness,
it can
be spontaneous, right? We've heard them, all of us have sort of said a flat.
He didn't say
that. No, he didn't say that.
I'm saying all of us have said in the past, if we flash, we get sort of an instantaneous blank. So that's the closest.
We were talking about absolute. We were talking about what we call absolute bodhicitta.
Okay.
Which is complete, that flash, yes.
Okay, so it would be an example that I'm getting at. If there's dependent origination, then there has to be emptiness with compassion to be dependent original, right? It has to also be dependent.
How do those two relate to how do those relate to each other?
Well, because everything we perceive, we say somehow is independent, is dependent origination, whether it's a web or whatever it is, right? It's somehow, because if you go through a sequence and I go through the same sequence, we get the same result. That's causal analysis.
What he's saying is something quite different than that.
Okay, so what's the
really
difference with dependent origination and spontaneity?
What Carl is saying is that we can't just hope that somehow or other we're going to get emptiness and therefore great compassion will bloom, okay? What he's saying in here, and Emily can read it again or explain it again, is that we aren't going to get the emptiness unless we actually do the relative work of compassion. In other words, the things like lojong and four immeasurables and all that, unless we work on our compassion, we aren't going to just jump into emptiness.
Yeah, so that's a confidence independent origination.
I don't get that.
You're employing cause and effect.
A cause and effect.
You're practicing, you're working on yourself. You're working with the teachings and you're mixing your teachings with your life. And yes, from the point of view of independent origination, you're actually contributing toward the development
of
compassion.
Yeah, it applies to all.
Making room for compassion. And of course, compassion can arise spontaneously when you've gotten yourself out of the way. You know, when you've actually gotten yourself away, instead of you being always in the spotlight and the center of everything, your opening allows this kind of spontaneous, natural response, which is compassion. And that's another way of describing compassion, is natural response.
But what this text is saying is that we have to work on our relative compassion with the practices of compassion we've been given, if anything like this is going to happen. We have to start wetting this process. Not thinking of some theory about whatever the hell, why is this related to this and dependent, blah, blah, blah. It says, how are we going to work with this ourselves? How are we going to do this moistening?
I don't know. I'm speechless. What do you want to say?
Keep going.
So, I guess I think for me, if we just rest in this kind of intellectual chewing, I feel it gets very dry. And without compassion and interaction with humans, that's what Mahayana is, right? It's the open path and it's working with others, then there is, it's almost pointless, it seems to me. I mean, that the compassion part and caring about other people and the open heart, which allows you to, bring other people along and to relate to other people, comes because your own ego has been reduced and you're not so fixated on yourself. So it's the process of stripping away ego, which we feel like, well, where am I then? And in fact, you're everywhere then, because you're not holding on to some little core of who you think you are. And therefore, you're much more able to relate to other people, because you're not just coming from your concept and fixed ideas, but you can actually see what that person needs. You can relate to them directly for whatever the situation is. So I think to me that makes sense, that the compassion would arise from the lessening of the ego fixation.
I'm not saying anything different than what you're saying, but you're getting away from the gripping about yourself, kind of just holding on to you, and letting go so that you can be available to other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Can I read something?
Okay.
It's not
it is related.
Thank you. This is from Mindfulness in Action. It's called Compassion is Not Logical.
Lovely.
Compassion is not logical. It's basically spacious and generous. A compassionate person might not be sure whether he is being compassionate to you or whether you are being compassionate to him, because compassion creates a total environment of generosity. Generosity is implied. It just happens, and that's, I think, where you were coming from, rather than you making it happen. It's just there without direction, without me, without for them.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
full of joy, a spontaneously existing grin of joy, mm-hmm. constant joy.
Well, that's really nice. Sure. Yeah, so you're not being a good person.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. 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 Or giving to other people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
She also has a chapter on spontaneous discipline.
Yes.
Who is where's that from?
Well, this is from Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche.
Meditation.
We talked about that.
I actually wrote about this to meet Mark when I was going to be taking my Bodhisattva vows. And I said that I found that when I'm really in my head and thinking things through, and then I find I'm really in my heart and feeling things through, and it's not until I can get into my gut. Where I'm really letting go of this and going to my gut, which seems to be so much more intuitive, is the word you use, that it's just, it's letting go of these parts, just going into that space where I actually find that my actions are truer in the capacity of compassion. Because if I'm pulling compassion from here, it still seems...
It doesn't come from anywhere. I think the point that she was bringing up is the compassion we're talking about when it really happens is spontaneous compassion. It's not attributable to anybody. No. And your gut is really might or might not be.
And this image of compassion just in the room.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's a field of compassion.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's.
When you meet a person who triggers that. You know, it's more. It's not sort of going. Oh, it's all about that person. It the room is, or the experience, the whole environment is filled with that, and that's where it's beautiful and creative. You know, it's not attributable. It's just reducible to some single person or some kind of. So we're talking about something because it's connected with this. We're talking about something transcendent in itself. You could say that's why compassion is so important because. In the teachings that we're looking at, and so important, particularly in the context of emptiness. Because emptiness without compassion is absolutely meaningless. It has no fundamental value at all, because you're just going to end up in a wasteland, you know, if that's what you really want
to do. I think this last question is really great here, and page 115, question. When we work on penetrating the boundary between self and other, is that prajna or compassion? And he says, it is both. And from a Mahayana Buddhist point of view, we cannot really dissolve the boundary between self and other through compassion or emptiness alone. Both have to go together. If we try to do this through compassion alone, there's still a certain clinging to ourselves and to real existence, which presents us from fully dissolving all the borders. If we try it with emptiness alone, we have the problem of the approach being too cold and clinical with not enough heart in it. It's just a technical process, like tearing down a wall between us and others. And what I like here, too, is this where he talks about the prajna. Oh, yeah, this is the prajna. So emptiness or prajna is very good for tearing down the walls. But in order to actually relate to others, we need compassion or the outgoing energy of our mind. So, we're...
Juicy.
Yeah, it's juicy.
Got it
yeah.
juicy, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I think when Michael said that sort of emptiness without compassion is useless, but I don't remember if it was in this readings or something I read recently that talked about the other, that compassion... without emptiness it will overwhelm you. And that, you know, that it was, I think, talking in the context of the Bodhisattva vow.
Right.
And that if you have the compassion towards all sentient beings without some awareness of emptiness, it will just drown you.
Right.
And that being aware of the emptiness is what enables you to function in a useful way
Brahmaviharas, or the four limitless ones, joy, peace, love, and equanimity. It's also equanimity. So we have this evenness. So we can have this great compassion, but we're not collapsing or falling apart or becoming incapable, because it's much more appropriate. We're talking about a compassion that's completely appropriate to the situation at hand, not like Nietzsche going crazy because you see a horse being whipped, you know. It's like, yeah, that's the story. Nietzsche went crazy. He flipped out.
I thought you said nature.
Friedrich Wilhelm Nietzsche, the famous philosopher.
Right, 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 right.
he completely had a nervous breakdown because he saw this horse being flagellated by somebody, and he never came back. So,
it's a little footnote.
Yeah, but I mean, basically, so we're talking about compassion being completely appropriate and effective. This is the kind of compassion we're talking about. It's not just some kind of oceanic thing. It wipes everybody out. Yeah.
I find that so. So I think it's time to close. Let's do that.